towards the near corner. Cody Eakin goes in shorthanded, feeds in front, score! It's Carlson! William Carlson shorthanded. Miller, right point shot, score! Tipped out in front, and it's 4-0 Vegas! Here comes Lindbergh, going to get ahead of the defense. He pulls it away, goes circle, he shoots, he scores! Oscar Lindbergh! Now a breakaway, here's David Perron, all by himself, the righty down the middle, fakes, backhand score! David Perron, 1-0 Vegas! Here's Hunt, setting up his man in front, Carrier, score! It's his first goal, William Carrier, 7-0 Vegas!
And welcome into the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton here along with Frank Harnish, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Wallace, Chris Chapman behind the board. The day after the Golden Knights did another first, fellas. They got their first shootout victory, a 4-3 win over the Anaheim Ducks. Now 17-9-1, 35 points on the ledger, Frank.
Yeah, and a nice victory. When this team goes to extra time, they certainly do not panic. Now 6-1 in the extra time, 5-0 in straight up overtime, and now 1-1 in the shootout. And also by virtue of that first shootout victory, also the first shootout goal for the Golden Knights.
They did have the first shootout goal, and that is our play of the game. Best mattress, best service, best selection, best price guarantee brings you Alex Tuck. And the game winner.
Tuck the righty, comes through the right circle, forehand, backhand, he scores! Alex Tuck! Woo! In the third round, he roofs it on the backhand. First shootout goal.
First shootout victory for the team in a situation in overtime in the shootout. They were missing David Perron, but the other fellas stepped up and brought home the victory, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Tuck has a move. We all know what it is now, so he's going to have to come up with another one, as Dan Duva said last night on the postgame show. But it was a great move. It was really good to get Gibson moving laterally. The fake really sold it, and the roof job was fantastic.
Yeah, and you have to wonder a little bit, too. It's like Alex Tuck comes out there. I'm sure that the Anaheim Ducks were trying to figure out who the shooters were going to be. Marchessault, okay, we expect that. James Neal, okay, we expect that. Alex Tuck? Wait, we don't know what his move. Gibson hasn't seen his moves before. He hasn't done them in the NHL yet. Well, Gerard Gallant looking like a genius. Some people kind of questioning when Alex Tuck went out there to take that third shot, and obviously the most important shot in the shootout. But he did his move. He got it past Gibson. And what a difference a few minutes in a hockey game makes, because he got that penalty in the overtime that the team had to kill off, which was really the crucial point of the game. They kill off that 2 minutes, and he comes back and gets the overtime winner.
I'm going to talk peaks and valleys, Ryan. That was certainly Alex Tuck late in that game. Gets the assist, helps the hard work to create the game-tying goal by Erik Haula, and then, as Frank articulated, takes the penalty in overtime, which most of the time is the nail in the coffin for your team. They rallied around him, got him off of the hot seat, and forced a shootout where he was the hero. So high, low, high.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things you're going to go through as a young player in this league, is you're going to get a little bit overzealous. And he was playing in overtime. Let's not lose sight of that. Gerard Gallant has enough confidence in him as a player and enough confidence in his 200-foot game to be on the right side of the puck to put him out there in overtime and trust him in those situations. The penalty was nothing egregious. I mean, it was a clear trip, and it wasn't that he was cheating on a play or whatever. He was just going for the puck, and those things happen. So it was good to see Gerard Gallant go right back to Alex Tuck and give him a chance to redeem himself after his teammates bailed him out, and most specifically Pierre-Édouard Bellemare, Braden McNabb, and Derek Englund.
Yeah, Pierre-Édouard Bellemare was really a key factor in that, along with Derek Englund and Braden McNabb. And Frank and I had the opportunity after practice today to catch up with Pierre and talk about that specific kill.
You know, as soon as they call the penalty, that's going to be a tough time. We know we had the time. I think it was power break, so we got the time to kind of talk with Engo and with Naber, and then the only thing you try is not giving them a great eight chances. I think we were in the right position through the entire 2 minutes. I think even when Carly came in, I think he did an unbelievable job. And that's it's good for the for the confidence of the team. We've been like having a little bit of a hard time in the KL and taking goals that maybe we should have avoided, and those 2 minutes give us for sure a little bit more confidence in our way to play.
You saw both England and McNabb stayed out for the full 2 minutes. What was the reaction on the bench for what those guys did?
Oh, well, obviously everybody is super psyched. Everybody's super pumped. You know, like usually when there is a call in overtime, it's pretty much game over. So if it's not game over, that's mean that York Kjells did an unbelievable job. I mean, Naber had, I think, he had one block, and then Engo had one when I was on the ice. That doesn't block that. I mean, there's no sense Subi's going to see it. So at that time of the game, each little touch of the puck, each moment that you might delay their way to, like, you know, or might just like frustrate them a bit because in the right position is a win.
Generally, in a situation like that, the theory is to keep the freshmen on the ice as much as possible and rotating things. But it seemed like during that particular penalty kill, you guys wanted to stay out there because you figured it was your job to do and that you could get the job done. Is that pretty much what your mindset was?
It all depends on how you feel and what chance do you have to change. For example, I just before the puck went off out the net there, like I may have had a chance to change, but it may have created like an odd man rushes. So at that time, I just like decide, okay, am I that tired or am I still fresh in my head to just stay and analyze? And I think that was the right thing to do.
When you're in a situation like that, and Alex Tuck is sitting in a penalty box, and you know he's feeling bad, praying that whatever happens that they can kill the penalty, then he comes back and ends up getting the game winner in the shootout. How big was that for a guy like him, and how much did the team really, were you guys happy for him that he was able to shine in that moment when it could have been a really bad time for him?
To be honest, I didn't even know it was him until you said that now. I had no idea it was him that was in the box. In this situation, I went on the ice and I was like, all right, let's try to kill this thing. Let's try to kill. I think about 10 seconds at a time. And then obviously I'm 100% sure that when he came out of the box, he was pumped and he was like, all right. And then when he got the chance to go to the shootout, I'm pretty sure that he might not have realized it, but in his back of his head, he knew that, all right, the adrenaline was probably pretty high. That might have helped him too for that shootout.
Got a big road trip coming up, Nashville, Dallas, two of the premier teams in the Western Conference. What are you looking for on this trip in terms of how the team's going to rally together?
Well, first, I think that we've been on the road, we've been okay. Like at home, we've been a good team. And even in time when we have been struggling, we found a way to win the game. On the road, I think we've at time found a way to lose the game instead of find a way to win the game. And what I'm looking for is just that focus on the first game tomorrow or the next day and just make sure that we are there ready to compete. And it's going to be a 60-minute game. We have had trouble because we played 40 or we played 35, we played 25, we played 55, and then 5 minutes kind of went on and boom, they scored. So this is what a role game is. You have to be consistent for 60 minutes and grind. It doesn't have to be a beautiful game, it just have to be a consistent game.
You guys have had quality goaltending since the injury to Marc-Andre Fleury, but how excited is the team to have Flower coming back in the lineup here soon?
Well, it's to be honest, it's just fun. If you listen to talks in the locker room, we haven't talked about that so hard. We haven't felt sorry because our top goalie, then second, then third, and then fourth got hurt. We didn't think about that. It doesn't matter at the end of the day what goalie, if you do the job to help him, he should be able to shine. And Marc-Andre Fleury is a goalie that in the beginning of the season he stood on his head when we were not shining, and just the fact that having back on the ice and chirp around, have jokes, and you see him with a smile on his face, then you know he's on his way to be back. So it's super exciting. It's our best player, so anytime your best player is about to come back, you can only be excited.
That was Pierre-Edouard Bellemare right here on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton, Frank Harnish, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, and guys, Pierre-Edouard Bellemare talking about the intricacies of that power play of sometimes you have to stay on a little longer than you want to because you don't want to create that bad situation.
Yeah, and certainly a great move by Coach Gerard Gallant to call that timeout to give the guys a little bit of extra rest so they could stay out there. And one of the most telling things that I thought he said there when he was talking about the road games, when he's talking about we're playing sometimes 35 minutes or 25 minutes or 55 minutes, but there's that little lull. Last night, if they don't tie that up and get it into the overtime and then win in the shootout, we might have been talking about that again with the start of the second period where they scored two goals in the first 5 minutes or so on the first two shots of that period. Then, of course, they scored three goals on eight. It's not that Malcolm Subban played a really bad period. He didn't face a lot. There were some opportunities that he was really kind of hung out to dry, but if they lose that game last night, we might be looking again at a little bit of lapse in the start of the second that could have cost them the game. But to their credit, they refocused, they went out there, they did what they needed to in the third period, and then, of course, got another victory at home.
And steady as it gets with Pierre-Edouard Bellemare, never a panic in this guy.
No, and it's a really tough position that he has to play because he's the guy that's always on the right side of the puck, and that's what he's paid to do. Essentially, he's paid to go out there and block shots, he's paid to go out there and kill penalties and get all of those unheralded jobs that nobody really wants to talk about. I mean, Eric Halla scores, everyone wants to talk to Eric Halla, right? Alex Tuck, a beauty in the shootout, everyone wants to talk to Alex Tuck. Nobody really goes out of their way to talk to Pierre-Edouard Bellemare, but you look at all the things that he does, all those little things away from the puck, the block shot, the stick in the lane to get the puck out. The minute and 20 seconds, he was the only forward on the ice for that penalty kill. I mean, the guy does really, really great things, and he was the one that I wanted to talk to most today, and I'm glad that you guys got the chance to do that because he's one of those guys that is a leader on this team. And when you look at these young players learning from him, it only means good things for the organization going forward.
You know, there's a term that's used in pretty much every sport on the planet. Doing the things that don't show up in the box scores. That's what Pierre-Edouard Bellemare does. He does it consistently, and that is the reason a lot of times that teams get victories. It's the difference between a W and an L, and at the end of the season, why some teams make playoffs, some don't. He's not looking for the glory. He's not necessarily looking for the headline, but he has the respect of every other teammate in that locker room, and I think that means more to him than some of the other accolades that you might get.
You know, during that overtime when they killed off that two-minute penalty, and Frank and I sort of turned to each other and said, if they win, that's your game moment right there, Ryan. And sometimes we think about that power play and we forget because it's overtime. It's not 5-on-4. It's 4-on-3. Mm-hmm. And for being the only forward, that's such a tremendous amount of ice for him to cover.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you know, Braden McNabb and Derek Englund, they're able to cover everything down low, and really they're – only job is to make sure that nothing comes in clean and that no passes get through the box. But Bellemare's the one that's got to pressure two guys at one time, and that's the hard part that he had to endure. And when Gerard Gallant took that timeout, I just assumed that Bellemare would be going back out onto the ice, but he didn't. He didn't play the final 40 seconds of that penalty kill. It was William Karlsson, and then that's just another thing. You've got your leading goal scorer killing 40 seconds of a penalty in overtime. If that doesn't give you an idea of just how balanced and how committed to the defensive end of the puck this team is, there's nothing else that's going to open up your eyes.
And it shows. That's the kind of players they were looking for. Not guys that were necessarily superstars in other cities. They have some of those as well. But the guys that can do everything, that aren't the glory hogs, that will do whatever it takes to win. They said it before. We've said it countless times on this show, during the games and everything else. They were looking for quality players and a certain type of person on and off the ice. They've gotten that a lot. And if you do have a chance to watch the replay of this game, because I know they show the games over and over again, during that penalty kill, watch the couple times when they show Alex Tuck in the penalty box there, because he is sitting there on pins and needles, kind of rocking back and forth, just chomping at the bit to get back on the ice. And then when that penalty's over and they do spring him out of the box, he shoots out of there like there's a cannon, like, all right, now we have a chance to win here. Whoo, we dodged that bullet, now let's go get him.
And let's not discount the fact that when Alex Tuck came out of the penalty box, there was a fantastic chance on goal, and Malcolm Subban came up with a huge, huge stop. Because, again, with any penalty, anytime your player's coming out of the penalty box, yes, the penalty is in effect killed, but it's going to take him 3 to 4 seconds to get back into the play.
Yep.
With a 4-on-3, because everything is so much closer to the goal, it's going to take closer to 5 or 6 seconds. So there was extra time that ticked off where the Golden Knights did not have numbers and Subban had to come up big. That was one of those moments where you knew who was going to win the game. Like when the Anaheim Ducks didn't convert on that power play, I don't care who you are. Golden Knights were winning that game. Whether it was going to be in overtime or a shootout or whatever, there was way too much momentum on their side after that kill.
Malcolm Subban, certainly an excellent game, and to be able to keep his head about him after what happened in the second period. And we talked about Pierre-Édouard Bellemare being slow, steady, confident, calm, reserved. It takes a village and it takes all kinds of personalities in order to make a team go. And about the opposite spectrum of Pierre-Édouard Bellemare is Nate Schmidt. Mm-hmm. And you had an opportunity, Ryan, to catch up with Nate Schmidt. He is our player highlight interview of the day, brought to you by Abrinkas Team Realty. Abrinkas Team Realty, your home sold guaranteed.
We didn't do a very good job of keeping our forwards in front of us. And that's on us as a group, you know, myself included. We didn't. That's something that we haven't done all year. And it's something that you don't ever expect that to happen. And the volume that it did happen in, I don't think I've back-checked that many times in a game before. So I think that's been one of the reasons on the defensive side of things, the reason why we struggled. And, you know, I think we just got a little bit away from our hard work a little bit, and that just it allowed them to open the game up.
In the third, did it just seem like it was inevitable that you guys would tie the game up or just keep the positivity going?
It felt like one of those nights that we were going to come back. It felt like we had the momentum, although I'll bet down we had the momentum. And I thought that you look up and down the bench and you saw a lot of energy from guys that it was going to come. Just stick to it, and whether we were going to score last second, last minute, you know, 6 minutes left, that it was going to keep coming. And even after we scored, I thought we had a chance to win the game, you know, before we went to overtime. So it's just something that pesky nights, you know. That's the reason. That's what we try and stick to. That's our MO. You gotta stick to your MO.
A lot of guys like me want to talk to the goal scorer. They want to talk to the guys that are on the score sheet. But just talk a little bit about that penalty kill in overtime by Bellemare and McNabb and Englund. I mean, everybody on the ice was selling out. Yeah. How awesome was that for you guys on the bench watching?
It fires our guys up. It's the reason I think after that we had 3 or 4 2-on-1s. We had, you know, we drew a penalty because our guys were so fired up because those guys went out there, not the typical guys you see on the ice and on overtime, and went out there and did their job. And it just, especially penalty kills, especially in the over, just everything that kind of adds up to be the pinnacle part of the game. Just, you know, Subi played a fantastic game in order to get us there. And those three guys, including Subi, got us to a position where we could get that extra point.
And just talk about Malcolm Subban, his maturation since coming here, obviously. We in the media didn't really know what we were getting when Malcolm was claimed off waivers.
Yeah, us either.
And now he's an integral part of this team. Yes. And did that just talk about him as the player, as a person.
Confidence makes a lot of things go the right direction. I think when he gets in here and sees what we're trying to build, and you get a lot of guys in the same situation he's in. He's a guy that might have been a tweener somewhere else. It's, you know, maybe wasn't as with an opportunity for him to move up. And then you get here, and there's a chance for him to, you know, play and play a lot and see a lot of, you know, ice time and have this confidence go up. It's awesome to see that as a player and as a teammate, because that's something that you look around the locker room, that's happening, you know, more than just once. And that's the reason why our guys are fighting so hard for each other. It's because they're all kind of in the same boat together.
Yeah. And let's talk about you. You're being employed more in a shutdown role. How do you take to that role? And is it maybe a sign of confidence that Gerard Gallant has in you? And do you take it that way?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely a little bit different. You know, it seemed as though they weren't playing their top line as much last night in certain situations. And so, you know, sometimes the minutes they shake out that way. But and for me personally, it's a great opportunity with me and Spies to play with a veteran guy that's played a lot of games and learn some things with him, but also bring some offensive things to the game, all while trying to take care of the other team's top line. It's the best way to try and round your game out. And all of us want to get better and want to take it to the next level. And for me, that's the route I have to take.
And how special has this been for you here in Vegas, this entire situation you got going on?
Yeah, it's been great. Personally, it's been great for our team. You know, I've really enjoyed my time here so far, and you know, winning obviously helps. But away from that, away from the hockey, the city, the town, the way that we've been recepted here, it's been phenomenal. And that's the reason why our guys have so much fun when they come into the rink. It's a great environment inside and outside the rink, and I'm just having a blast while doing it.
That was Nate Schmidt. And Ryan, what really stuck out with that is Nate Schmidt arrived sort of with the reputation of being offensive-minded, and he's really taken the identity and been excited about the defensive side of the puck.
Yeah, and you heard him say it. That's what you've got to do to get better. You've got to round out your game, and if you're an offensive-minded defenseman, you do still have to play defense because that's basically the title of what your job is. And you know, there's an opportunity for Nate Schmidt to get more minutes, and that opportunity is through better and solid defense. And I think he's really warm to that task, and I think he looks at that as a compliment more than anything, that the Gerard Gallant entrusts him enough to be a top pairing defenseman, a shutdown defenseman, a guy that can hurt you both ways by not allowing the other team to score, and then by starting the rush with a nice stretch pass. So it's nothing but good things for the development of Nate Schmidt.
And you know, it seems to be the theme of this locker room. When we talk to anybody, offensive players that are saying that they want to get better because they want to work on their defense, defensive players that are either working to become better offensively, or like you said in Nate Schmidt's case there, being a little bit more defensive minded and doing stuff. And I think it all goes with the coaching staff and the player mentality and the way that this team has really rallied around each other. And let's face it, when you have a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury, who I know we haven't seen for a while, hopefully we'll see back in a game in the not too distant future. He's been back, he's been skating around a little bit, he's getting his legs under him to know that he's past the concussion protocol. But when he came out and said that he was listening to Coach Dave Pryor and picking up some stuff from him and working on his game, if a guy with 3 Stanley Cups is going to do stuff to improve his game and change things around, how could anybody else in that locker room not do it? The stars of this team are willing to change, and the role players are as well, and that's one of the reasons why they've got this success that is basically blowing everybody in the NHL and the sports world on the planet away.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you say that, because I think it was yesterday or a couple of days ago where I said, when Marc-Andre Fleury returns to practice, that's going to make Malcolm Subban better by default, because you've got this guy that has thousands of practices at the NHL level, literally thousands of practices under his belt, and he's going to be in there working fundamentals with Dave Pryor. And Malcolm Subban, as a rookie, is going to see that. A 3-time Stanley Cup champion, a guy that has won it all in this league, is in that goal, working on edge work, working on not overcommitting, working on all of the fundamentals that make you into a very good elite goalie. And he's going to see that, and that's going to rub off.
Going out of his comfort zone.
Well, in some ways, a little bit
here and there. Not all around, but willing and open to look at different things that maybe weren't part of his game plan before.
Like, let me basically say this. You are seeing Matt Murray not be as effective as he could be in Pittsburgh because Marc-Andre Fleury is not there. I firmly believe that not just having him as your safety net, not just having him as your backup, Matt Murray's not getting to learn and soak up all of the knowledge that Marc-Andre Fleury has every single day. And that's why he was falling on hard times at the beginning of the season, because he had Antti Niemi. Like, what's he going to learn from Antti Niemi? He's not going to learn anything from him. He's won more Stanley Cups than Antti Niemi. Matt Murray can't learn anything from a goalie like that. He can learn stuff from Marc-Andre Fleury. And that's why Matt Murray was so good for those couple of years that he had Fleury there as his safety valve to bounce ideas, to ask questions, to figure out, how am I playing this wrong? How could I play it better? What can I do to improve? And now you're seeing Matt Murray hit a little bit of a slide with his play, and the only change is that Marc-Andre Fleury's not there.
And again, to his credit, and people say, well, it's your job and this and that. Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't have to be receptive. He doesn't have to get in the ear and help out these other young goalies and tell them what they're working on and this, that, and the other. We've seen it in other sports where the superstar is basically like, well, that guy's trying to take my job. Why would I help him right now? That's not Marc-Andre Fleury whatsoever. He helped Matt Murray. Some people say Matt Murray's the reason that he's gone. Well, it is the reason that he's gone, because you can't pay 2 starting goaltenders the money that they would both demand. But Marc-Andre Fleury, who could have been traded last year. He could have got out of that. He could have already been on his way someplace else. He said, no, let's win another cup together. Then let's let the chips fall where they may. Being chips, they fell here in Vegas, which everybody thought they were going to. But he is the consummate professional because of that. He could easily go, look, I've got three Stanley Cups. I don't have to prove anything to anybody and walk out of there. Because of that leadership, and we always talk leadership, Marc-Andre Fleury might not be the guy who's jumping up and down and waving the pom-poms, but there's many different ways to lead. He leads by example, and he leads by being a classy guy who's always trying to make everybody, including the guy trying to take his job away from him, better, and that is the leader that I want in a locker room.
You can certainly see how the team rallied around him and how they feel about him just with the reception that he received when he came onto the ice yesterday. When he came on the ice to today. Lots more to get to here on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. When we come back, we're going to talk about what remains for the rest of the week for the Golden Knights, take a look around the league, and get some reaction from Russia on the IOC's decision yesterday. You're listening to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, your home for Golden Knights hockey in the Valley.
Maybe lost the angle. Spezza on the left, out in front, toe save, rebound, it waffles around, it goes in! Vegas finally scores! It's James Neal! Lindberg to the right, and a shot, stop, rebound, another goal! Another tip in front, this time it's Lindberg! Ducks have now scored three straight, but is there another one? There is! It's Halla! It's a tie game! Third point of the night for Halla! 3-3 with 4:22 to go in the third! Tuck the righty, comes through the right circle, forehand, backhand, he scores! Alex Tuck! Kasha 0-for-1 this year. The righty goes down the middle. Forehand. Stopped by Subban! Vegas wins it! A double fist pump from Subban! Golden Knights prevail in the shootout. 4-3, the final.
And that was a recap. Your 4-3 victory by the Golden Knights in their steel gray and black with gold trim. They got the victory, Ryan, and brought it home. Good times.
What color scheme would you say the Anaheim Ducks employ? Is it was it white and black with orange trim?
With orange trim and a hint of gold. Not as well. I did see some of the old that just said Ducks across last night. Yeah. I saw a sort of the pantheon of jerseys in the crowd.
It's got to go back to the eggplant and teal, in my opinion. It really does.
I like the eggplant parmesan. Yeah. Not so much of it as a color. But good times indeed. And the Golden Knights, as a reminder, are hosting a toy drive that will commence on December 12th, the game versus Carolina at 7 o'clock at T-Mobile. Fans are asked to bring a new unwrapped toy for the collection before the game. Those who donate will receive a Marc-Andre Fleury game day poster. All toys will be donated to the CASA Foundation, which is a local organization that supports the needs of children in foster care throughout Clark County. So that is a Tuesday against Carolina, 7 o'clock game start. And we could perhaps, on Marc-Andre Fleury poster night, see Marc-Andre Fleury. Father's trip this weekend to Nashville and Dallas confirmed. Marc-Andre Fleury will be traveling with the team. We don't know if we will see him or not, but with a concussion, always good to get somebody in the air, see how the travel goes. That's sort of like another step, another check to in the old box list of things that you want to see Marc-Andre Fleury come out of okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think if all goes well, was we kind of gave, we were given a 4 to 5 day time span between when he's in, at practice to when he's going to be able to be game ready. That would put us right around Tuesday. And I think that if the plan is to have him play against Pittsburgh on Thursday, you got to start him Tuesday. There's way too much pressure then on Marc-Andre Fleury to have it be his first game back after a lengthy absence, after a concussion against his former team for the first time ever.
Yeah, not only too much pressure, but also just too much of the emotion and everything in there, else in there taking on Pittsburgh. I agree with you. They've got to get him a game before that. That can't be his first start. I mean, if it is, then it is, but I don't think that's going to be the thing. I do want to throw in one other thing about the toy drive. If for some reason you can't make that game, you don't have season tickets, whatever, because I know it's one of the hottest tickets around, if you go over to City National Arena, they do have boxes right now where you can distribute toys as well. So if you can't make it to that game at T-Mobile, you can do that right now and help them out with their toy drive over at City National. We saw several boxes over there today when we were over there for the skate.
Yeah, so City National, stop by or bring down to the game on Tuesday. And I think you're right. If you have the opportunity to get him in early, you certainly want to do that. I have a feeling that there will be not an empty seat along Press Row when the Pittsburgh Penguins come to town.
No. I can't imagine that there will be. And it's going to be interesting because my assignment is typically the visitor's locker room. So it'll be interesting to see just how many people are in the visitor's locker room trying to get Crosby's impressions of playing Fleury for the first time, assuming that Fleury plays that game, and then also assuming if Fleury plays that game, Fleury's impressions of having to face Crosby. All we could really hope for is that if Fleury is playing that game, Sidney Crosby has a clear-cut breakaway and Marc-Andre Fleury absolutely stones him. I think that would be fantastic because it would be a great thing to get sound bites from both of those guys considering their friendship, their history, and how much they respect each other.
I can't imagine how loud that breakaway will be.
Oh, it'd be great.
It'd be fantastic. And Not the only team with goaltender issues. The Golden Knights, the Panthers, having issues as well. Roberto Luongo will be out for several weeks with a lower body injury, and James Reimer will be filling in full-time.
Yeah, and not surprising. If you saw that play with Luongo, it looked innocent enough. It didn't look like anything drastic. It wasn't, I mean, we've seen goalies do the splits more, but as soon as he moved his leg out, he immediately went down. You knew that it was something serious, had to be helped off the ice there. Hopefully it's not too bad for him, but let's face it, Roberto Luongo, not exactly a youngster anymore. He's been around a lot of times, has a ton of wins under him, and he's been having a good season. He's been playing well, but as soon as he made the move to stop that puck, it looked serious right from the get-go.
Yeah, I didn't see the play. I'll have to go back and watch it, but that's a tough break for Roberto Luongo. We were just talking about him in the history books, you know, one of two now goalies that have won 200 games for two separate franchises, joins the likes of, well, Patrick Waugh, just some guy that you may have heard of once or twice, but it's tough. But Frank said it, he's not a young guy anymore. And while you can do everything right in the offseason to get your body ready and prepared, you're just not made the same way you were when you were 22, 23 years old. And, you know, the Panthers give up a lot of opportunities. They give up a lot of chances. Roberto Luongo has to stand on his head quite a bit playing in front of that team, and it's a tough break for him and the organization as a whole.
And he's got a pretty hefty workload, too, with that team.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Like he faces a lot of shots and
plays a lot of games.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
Other injuries that may have ramifications on the Golden Knights. Dallas Stars goalie Ben Bishop day-to-day with a sore back. He will miss the Stars game at the Blues on Thursday. Kari Lehtinen will play.
Well, let's hope for Saturday Kari Lehtinen will be the starting goalie as well, because the Golden Knights are 1-0 against Kari Lehtinen and 0-for everything against Ben Bishop. So, you know, Gerard Gallant didn't talk too much about Dallas Stars today, but what he did say was interesting. Obviously, they need to find a way to break through offensively against that team, because Dallas came in and played a very good game here at T-Mobile and shut out the Golden Knights for the first time in their history. But what Gallant said was interesting. Sometimes, and we all forget this, but sometimes the other team that they're playing has a say in what happens in a game too. So it's not always what the Golden Knights didn't do right or didn't do wrong. Sometimes the other team just does more right things than the Golden Knights do.
Yeah, and if memory serves me correctly, Ben Bishop hasn't given up a goal in five periods of play against the Golden Knights. Kari Lehtinen lets him in on a frequent basis, and that is one of the reasons. Plus, we know that all sports is mental. The Golden Knights, if they see Kari Lehtinen in there, they're going to feel more confident. They might not admit it. They might say we keep to our same game plan and everything else. Mm-hmm. Ben Bishop has figured them out up to this point here. Kari Lehtinen, not so much.
Wanted to get you guys' reactions on news out of Russia. We found out the International Olympic Committee had banned Russian athletes from the Olympics. We were waiting for a response from President Vladimir Putin as well as the KHL. Vladimir Putin spoke today about the ban of Russian athletes and what that would mean for those from his country. He said, first of all, we need to say straight that to some extent we are guilty ourselves because we gave pretext for this. Secondly, I think this pretext was used in a not completely honest way, to say the least. Undoubtedly, we will not declare any blockade, will not prevent our Olympic athletes from participating. If any one of them wants to participate in their personal capacity, we will not declare a boycott. We will not prevent our Olympians from competing. They may take part in their personal capacity. What concerns me, being Vladimir Putin, what concerns me is, when will the Olympics take place? February, isn't it? And when is the presidential election? March. I suspect that all of this is done to create conditions on someone else's behalf to provoke sports fans and athletes' anger that the state allegedly had something to do with it. So Vladimir Putin saying perhaps the International Olympic Committee is tampering in Russian elections.
It's a coup. That was very wordy. That was almost like you were reading the Odyssey or something like that. It was, I didn't follow a whole bunch of it until it got to the conspiracy theory against Putin's position. So that's cool. That's good.
I'm just a little bit concerned that some of that statement there, that I'm agreeing with the leader of Russia more than I agree with some of our politicians these days. I'm finding that very disconcerting.
Well, the Russian State Duma, which is the lower house of parliament, also had a reaction, and they are right now reportedly assisting the KHL in preparing a bill, so preparing Russian legislation that would allow the league to withhold its domestic and foreign players from playing in the upcoming games. Mikhail Derechnev, who is involved in this, said the KHL should have the right to not let Americans and Canadians and other hockey players go to the Olympic Games. We deserve the same rights as the NHL.
Why now?
He said that the IOC is destroying the existing world order in sports.
So you want the same rights as the NHL. How about you pay your players on time and don't have checks bounce? How about you do that if you want the same respect and the same rights as the NHL? And then how about you make this decision before your players are banned from the Olympics?
And how about you say, okay, you know what? The gold, silver, and bronze medal teams were all filled with players that play in the KHL. So we just won on the biggest world stage or whatever. Well, the Russian players can go. Everybody can go right now. They are the ones who cleared 3 weeks out of their schedule so that players could go over. And now they're going to make a stand that they don't want it? That's just stupid.
Well, it would take some legislation because, according to International Ice Hockey Federation President Rene Fossil, he told a Russian news agency TASS that the KHL, being a member of the Russian Ice Hockey Federation, has followed the statutes and bylaws of the IIHF, and they have to release foreign players and the national team players from other countries to play in the Olympics because the KHL falls under the IIHF doctrine, where the NHL does not.
Yes. It's just so sad to see politics and sports mixing. That's never happened before, has it?
That's a new one. I can imagine that, somebody trying to use sport
this
to
is,
promote
this
their
is like
agenda.
The biggest temper tantrum I've ever seen. It really is. Like, we cheated. We got caught. Now this is a thing that's happening. Now we're going to punish everybody else. And it's a conspiracy against the election or re-election of me, one, Vladimir Putin. Like, that's just, it's so stupid.
But Putin even admitted that, yeah, we did cheat.
Yes.
I mean, they're actually even saying that they did.
We explained that we cheated, and then that was used What was the word he said? We provided the context.
Right, the pretext.
The pretext.
Right.
And then that pretext was used, what was the word that he said? Dishonestly?
It was used, where is it? My notes are all over the place here. Secondly, the pretext was used in a not completely honest way, to say the least.
You know what else isn't honest? Cheating in the first place. Just don't do it.
You know what else isn't honest? Pretty much every time a politician opens their mouth.
The pro-Kremlin newspaper Izvestia says that the Olympics can't get by without Russia. Russian Olympic athletes will defend the honor of the motherland under any banner, and this is akin to political racism.
It's akin to your country cheated. Therefore, you cannot represent your country under their flag. But hey, you can still come if you can prove that you didn't cheat. I'm failing to see why this is such a, like, you're still able to go. If you can prove that you, as an individual athlete, did not have anything to do with the doping, you can still go. It's okay. It's okay with Putin. It's okay with the IOC. Like, I don't understand. What am I missing here?
Well, Mikhail Gorbachev said, this is an absolute outrage. This is sports, damn it.
Okay.
There's been no reaction from Kim Jong-un. So good times. This is good times. No.
It's not sports, because now it's an assassination on Putin's ability to win re-election.
Okay, now here's the real question. What does NBC feel about all this? Are people going to watch even more now to see what goes on and to see if Washington win and see what they do on the medal stand in that? I think NBC, with the fact that the NHL isn't going to the Olympics, I think they got to be loving this, because what's the old adage? There's no such thing as bad publicity. The Olympics are now being talked about.
Well, all I know is that, unfortunately, we'll not get a Matt Lauer editorial exclusive.
No. Is that really unfortunate?
As he has been replaced by Megyn Kelly, so perhaps we would get something from her.
Oh, I was hoping it was Ryan Lochte that was replacing him.
Russia fielded a team of 232 athletes in Sochi. They won 33 medals, and 11 of them have been stripped, so 33% of their medals gone. Now from Sochi, more to come as we have a couple of months till the opening ceremony. This story will only get better. When we get back, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, Frank Harnish, I'm going to look a little bit at what the NHL is going to be doing right before the Olympics. This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey in the Valley. And welcome back to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton, Frank Harnish, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace. And the only thing better than listening to Ryan wax poetic about international hockey on the air is listening to him do it off the air.
Oh, yeah, I'm fun. I'm fun.
Unedited, behind-the-scenes, raw Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace on international hockey. Spectacular. And there is some international hockey news that concerns one Cody Glass and Nick Suzuki. Both of them have been invited to participate in Team Canada's camp for the World Juniors, which will happen this December, January.
So what you're saying is George McPhee might have found some diamonds in the rough at the 6th and 20-something pick in the first round.
Yes.
Yeah, looking forward to that. By the way, if you want to hear a little bit more unedited Ryan, check out the Rink Rats podcast, where he can be a little bit more off the cuff and show his real, true feelings.
Yes, lvsportsnetwork.com, Rink Rats.
Yes, go listen. Like us. Subscribe to us. Do whatever you want to us. It's fine.
Ryan the Hockey Guy and Jesse Granger. So always a good time for those guys. But what I hear, though, is that if Canada wins the gold medal at the World Juniors, that will help Prime Minister Trudeau stay Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't mix any politics in with it.
That's right. Stick around. T.C. Martin, the doctor, is next.